Well, hi everybody, it's the Week in the Tackle podcast, the podcast where we look at the previous week in football and or soccer, and we do our best to tackle the things that we found interesting. I'm Tom Rennie, alongside me for the show, as ever, is Apple TV star, MLS legend, all-round top lad, Brian Dunny Dunseth. How are you, mate? You all right?
I'm fantastic, Rennie. What a weekend it was. At some point, maybe we won't get to it, but I should probably reference it. I think there's a certain defender now for West Ham that has elevated himself into the conversation and the elite status of Tilo Kehrer. There's a new man in the block, and his name is Mavropanos.
Yes, I mean, we're not going to be doing West Ham on the show because there are significantly more interesting things to talk about. But now you've mentioned it, I will say, who watched Dino Mavropanos and thought that's a good defender? Mm. Just an utterly woeful, position-free dunce.
Yeah.
And his performance in the game against Brentford, who, by the way, crossed the ball a lot, was just utterly, utterly diabolical.
You know what I did right there? I metaphorically and maybe physically just twisted your titty right before the start of the show.
Yes, you did, yeah. You licked your finger and just wedged it in my ear hole at the very start of the program. That isn't a topic on today's podcast, you'll be delighted to hear. I do want to talk about the Arsenal performance at Newcastle and Mikel Arteta and the statement and all that sort of stuff. I want to find out what's going on in MLS playoffs because apparently a referee plays for the Vancouver Whitecaps now, which I think is hilarious. I want to get to all of that, and we might do a little bit of Tommy Tickles as well because he's funny, and so we'll get to it. But I wanted to start with the Tottenham-Chelsea game from Monday Night Football. Firstly, I want to say I gave my ticket up for this game. I did have a ticket for it, but then I was unable to attend, so I gave it away. So again, well done, Tom. But this game, absolutely amazing, Danny. And there's so much to talk about from it and so many jump-off conversations that we can have from it. I want to start with it. 4-1 it finishes, right? It's 1-0 to Tottenham. And there was a great breakdown of this everywhere. But I wanted to read this one that came from Betfair because I actually couldn't watch the first half. So I'm busy. So I had things on. I couldn't watch the first half. So I turned it on halftime. Okay, well, 1-1 must have been a pretty decent half. And then I went to the old socials and I was like, what's been going on? Here's the tweet from Betfair. Kulusevski fires Spurs ahead. Son goal ruled out for offside. Udogi avoids red card. Sterling goal ruled out. Romero avoids red card. Caicedo goal ruled out. Romero gets red card. Palmer equalises for Chelsea with penalty. Jackson goal ruled out. Mickey van der Ven injured. Maddison injured. That was the first 45 minutes and or 60 minutes of the game. Dunny, some people loved it. Some people hated it. I loved it. I've since watched the entire game back and enjoyed it immensely. How did you feel about the game? Was it a disaster, an embarrassment for the Premier League, or was it, as the cliche goes, a terrific advertisement?
It was probably a little bit of both, to be quite honest with you. I think when you broad stroke this, this will go down as one of the reference points. I would maybe equate this to Martin Keown and Ruud van Nistelrooy after the penalty miss between Arsenal and Manchester United, where he jumps on, kind of forearm shivered him on the shoulders as he kind of ran by. I think because we're kind of in this timeline right now where we're so hyper focused and overly critical to an extent about what the implementation of VAR and the application of VAR has recently been, that we're in this kind of moment now where I think it's going to be one of those moments where we're less talking about how reckless Udogi was going for that challenge and that ball, knowing that he's already sitting on a yellow, or the fact that Christian Romero, hey, bud, you just got away with one. You might want to not go completely off the ground and follow through. And by the way, I've made this tackle multiple times throughout my youth and in my career. You know exactly what you're doing. It's called get the ball and get a piece of him. He knows, and especially don't do it inside the penalty area. He wins the ball, but this is not, it's just not mid-90s anymore. So, and the game's gone soft. Thankfully, his foot wasn't stuck in the ground. It had everything. It had Ange football, Ange DNA, kangaroo jack all the way through in that first 15 minutes. And then it all went to shit in a handbag. Sorry, Tim. I mean, it really did. It's... For a team that at the weekend was, started Friday, was in first place, had results not gone their way, and they're very fortunate that both Liverpool and Arsenal slipped up as well, they could have theoretically been in fourth position starting Tuesday morning. And it just shows you how tight it is. And I've been an advocate of Tottenham to be loud and proud about the fact that they were in first place coming out of October. You've got zero concern about Champions League football, about Europa League football, about Conference League football, even about the Carabao Cup, biggest drink ever made. Sorry, Tim. So you're focused on FA Cup. You've had four games that you're focusing on during this window between the two international windows. This is your chance to continue to fly, put the pedal to the metal. And again, another London derby, the return of Pochettino brings its own angst to the conversation, the party-like atmosphere at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And that first 15 minutes, man, they were absolutely flying. And I'm on this group chat, and it's called Tottenham Lunacy. And it includes my man Heads in Detroit and Gabe Ortiz, former associate producer at the show at Sirius. They are nut jobs when it comes to Tottenham. And they just completely hammer me over anything Manchester United, Harry Maguire, Jadon Sancho. He calls them 10 hogs over and over and over. And rightly so. I take a brunt of a lot of things. And I was sticking it to him yesterday. For the 120 minutes that was played with added extra time, I was sticking it to him. But there's still something I can't take away from him. And there's a spirit to this group, which you can call reckless 100%. You can maybe call naive 100%. But, you know, that quote from Ange Postecoglou afterwards and saying, well, if we're down to five men, we'll still give it a whack, whatever his terminology was. I mean, again, he seems like the type of manager that everybody would want to play. And maybe most importantly, we finally saw old ED15 back on the field.
Oh, why is Ange crushing the career of an England international and not playing him?
Oh, we haven't heard any of that narrative. Oh, okay, cool. But yeah, he's back.
I've mentioned that nobody a few times. We spoke about it on the podcast when poor Eric Dyer turned up to the social media guy at the training, and he was like, no, don't bother filming me. You're not going to use it. And they were like, oh, no, we'll use it. He's got 40 caps for England. Yeah. He's been a great player for the English national team. He's not a fucking child turning up on a charity day. Sorry, Tim. So, yeah, Postecoglou's got a little nasty streak in him that he's certainly done pretty dire.
But by the way, these injuries. Oh, God. I mean, you talk about devastated. And listen, to lose
Mickey van der Ven or Maddison is catastrophic. To lose both in the space of a couple of minutes for weeks.
Well, and you just had to make the attack-minded, defensive-minded substitution, and all of a sudden, tactically, maybe you have regret over that subs and maybe not taking out somebody else. But I mean, the spirit of the group will be there. They will go into the locker room and say, we gave it a kick, like we gave it a go. Naive. But they went for it. I can 100%. They are the anti Antonio Conte type of football.
You can get away with it when you've won X amount. It was 8-2, I think, was their record. 8 wins and 2 draws. If they lose 4 in a row and play like that, we're not having the same conversation.
We are not. And now there is a specific amount of pressure because there's the hype machine, right? And it's easy for everyone outside of Tottenham to say, oh, so Spursy, here we go. It's so Spursy. But on the inside, the ego involved with the way that this team has played post Harry Kane in particular. And now everybody, the injuries you just said, but throw in Richarlison. Now Richarlison out of nowhere just elects to publicly come out and be like, hey guys, I'm having surgery on my pubic bone. I'll be back. Time for me to go to sleep and rest. It's like, what's happening? Yeah, I mean, it was the most wild. And as much as Chelsea is going to celebrate this, and Nicholas Jackson gets his three goals on the day.
Worst hat trick ever, right? The most pathetic. You know, I keep thinking about, I'm sure you've seen this, the Michael Owen VHS tape where he was like, years and years ago, it was like a skills challenge with Michael Owen. And there's a video doing the rounds of him rounding like a 13-year-old goalkeeper and scoring, or he hits like 20 sweet volleys past this child for this VHS video. And the great Neville Southall, the Wales and Everton goalkeeper, he's there doing the video with him as well. And there's a great moment where Michael Owen has smashed in his 17th volley past a child from a few yards out. And Big Nev says, yeah, well done, Michael. He's 13. Like it had that. It just had that energy
that vibes,
about it.
Yeah,
that yeah it just had that kind of like when he did this. He did the Ronaldo see you.
Yeah.
It's like the piss.
Well, listen, I get it. He's scoring goals in the Premier League. There's been a lot of speculation. Psychologically, he's been bearing the brunt of all of this. It's like Darwin Nunez-esque type speculation about Jackson up top. But here's the thing that was so kind of fascinating to me. There's a moment in which the game's still level, and I think it's Poch has Raheem Sterling and somebody else next to him. And it was almost as if they're all talking, right? They're all talking.
Yeah.
They got their hands over their face. And it was almost as if they were like saying to, Poch was saying to these guys, we're fucking up two men. Sorry, Tim. We're at fucking Spurs. Sorry, Tim. If we don't fucking score goals, sorry, Tim, we're going to be in big fucking trouble. Sorry, Tim. All of us. Like, that's what it felt like. Like,
yeah.
Please score some fucking goals. Sorry, Tim. Like, that's
We are at your uncle's wedding. He has invited us for the full day. And if you kids don't start fucking behaving, sorry, Tim, right now, we are going straight home and nobody gets ice cream. Okay? Cole Palmer.
But by the way, like, I don't want to knock him when he's down, but like Mudryk comes on.
Oh.
He pissed away like the first like five or six balls and like dribbled over the end line twice. And I'm like, it almost can't get any easier for you at this stage. And like,
we have handicapped the opposition massively. Surely you can score from this. And they couldn't even do a simple chip over the top until the seventh.
But there was like
20 minutes to work out. Should we chip it?
Yeah. It was a moment where like Caicedo looks over at Enzo after like Mudryk did something, and it was almost like the fuck, like they just looked at each other. Sorry, Tim. No, but like, you know, when like you're playing football and you're like with somebody and then someone like makes a bad pass or something, you just like look at your mate and you're like,
this guy. Yeah. You'll need to watch this on YouTube to really, you'll need to watch that on YouTube to really appreciate Brian Dunseth's extraordinary faces there in that moment.
Oh, man. Yeah. So anyways,
can I ask you two questions on this? Because I've got two angles I want to take on this, and I want to get your opinion. The first one is this high line, right? Now, I want to get your opinion as a man who's played football for your entire career and analysed it, because I haven't. I have analysed it, and I do watch it, of course, and I do love it. The high line, I thought, was the tactics of a moron. I thought this was really unbearably stupid. Now, Postecoglou, we all love him as a personality and all that, right? I get that. Everyone loves Ange Ball. Everyone loves it. I've been in press conferences with him, and I think he's intense and interesting, and I believe him and all that sort of stuff. But I got a great text from a friend of mine who's an Arsenal fan, a well-known broadcaster and journalist. I'm not sure he wants to be on the show, and so I won't mention his name here. But he said, can you imagine the reaction if Granit Xhaka and Gabriel had been sent off and Arteta played a high line with nine men against Chelsea like that? The next day, people would be slamming him against the wall, calling for his resignation.
Yep.
And there was a clip in this game on the 67th minute where they are playing the now famous 7-0-1 formation. And the entire formation is being played in the space of about 10 yards from halfway line to lip of the centre circle. And Chelsea pop it over the top, balls up the chance, whatever. Yeah. It reminded me a lot, and you might probably won't get this reference, but in cricket, if the batsman is super crap, like utterly useless, like he is the... there's a guy called Phil Tufnell, famously. He was an England spinner. Loved the cigarettes and the booze, and he used to go out there as the last batsman, and he'd be out first ball because he was diabolical, didn't practice, didn't care. And he'd be the first one to tell you that, Tuffers, right? And what you would do is you would line up the slips, and so the slips of the guy next to the wicketkeeper to his right, to a right-handed batsman who are just there to catch it. And if the batsman is utterly garbage, what happens is they line the slips up. Sometimes they'll put all 10 outfield players and the wicketkeeper in a line. No one on the boundary, no one behind the bowler. There's just a line of people because this mug is so useless, he's going to clip it to our catchers and he's going to be out, right? That's the basic premise of it. I tried to Americanize some of it.
Well, it's like, it'd be like baseball bringing your outfield into your infield.
Yes.
You can't, like, it's the pitcher up and you know he's not even going to get any wood on the ball.
So, yep. Bring it in, guys.
Come on, man. Come on, he's only going to bunt.
It's basically that.
He's only going to bunt the ball.
It's basically that, right? It's when you think the opposition is so useless, you do it. And I kept thinking of that because I thought maybe Postecoglou thinks Chelsea is so useless, they are like the Phil Tufnell of this situation. They will not work it out. But I'm watching it, Danny, and I just, tell us a bit from a tactical standpoint, because it looks stupid and it did not work. And in the end, if it doesn't work, I think we can say it was the wrong tactic. And we saw a few weeks ago, Liverpool literally play at this ground with nine men, go so defensive, they nearly held on for a draw until Matip's late own goal. And do it incredibly. I was at their game, incredibly impressive the way they did it. This was the exact opposite, and they've gone on to lose 4-1. Tell us what Postecoglou's thinking tactically, and tell us if you think that can work against Chelsea or anyone else.
Yeah, it can work, but any time that I've played, and it doesn't matter if you're playing a back four, a back three, back five, whatever the hybrid looks like, if you're playing with a spare defender that doesn't have the individual marking responsibility, or you're still 1v1, you have to have somebody with an insane amount of speed and athleticism. And their ability to deal with not only the runs, but more importantly, identifying second runs popping out of the midfield for like well-timed balls up over the top. Because when you're holding a high line, it's and like for me as a player, I wasn't necessarily quick, but I was fast, if that made sense. Like if I was already in a run, I could virtually stay with what I felt like pretty much anyone, because I could cut down angles and I had a good pace. But like if I had to turn and sprint with somebody, if this guy was just a burst sprinter, I was done for. So I always had to figure out my marks. I had to figure out my hands. Let me put this down. Like I had to figure out how to use my hands. If I was going to hip check, if I was going to hit high, if I was going to kidney shot, if I was going to kind of get over shoulder, if I was going to get under shoulder, depending on where the touch was. I want to always make sure if I was checking, they couldn't wrap me. So I always had to give like an arm and distance so I couldn't get spun. So these are all the things that you're thinking about. But when you're covering and you're shifting, you always want to have somebody that's faster than the other. You don't want two guys that are the exact same. So when you think about this back line now, the moment that Mickey goes down, they're in trouble. Because he is the verticality pace. He's the athleticism pace. And if you play that way, it'll work with certain players. But if you're going to play Dyer and play that high line, you better have somebody off of him on angles that can cover. And so you think about left back, you think about right back. Do you have the athleticism to pinch and shift on the far side? Do you have the two center backs that can stay and drop? Where are you asking? And I'd be intrigued to go through some visual clips with Postecoglou so he could kind of show the game model and see on the training ground what he's asking his defensive midfielder or his primary six and eight to do in terms of shifting, because I think that's important. But at the end of the day, it comes down to pressure on the ball. And if you don't have correct pressure on the ball, at a bare minimum, you got to give yourself a 5 to 10 yard drop, because that's you're if I was going to play against a setup like this as a center back, I'm hitting diagonals. First ball I get off the outside left back, I'm opening up my hip and I'm hitting the switch off the outside left shoulder of the left-sided center back, because I'm going to drop it into that space behind. And the moment I can get in behind those center backs, then I've got a right winger that can get to it, a forward that can get to it, a number 10 that's making a deep run out of the midfield. You know what I mean? So you're constantly looking to kind of shadow drop balls in behind the back line, because you know that they don't have pace. And even if you do have pace, the worst feeling in the world, Rennie, is having somebody on your back as a defender. Because if the ball's bouncing, how do you play it back? Which foot, which angle are you playing for the goalkeeper? God forbid, you've got to try to head the ball back with pressure. If the guy's running up your tailpipe, do you flick it back over and kind of bounce and turn and kind of play yourself out? So it is incredibly risky to play such a high line. There's so many things that have to be right. But as I say that, they went 10 games undefeated. So
with nine men is the caveat here, isn't it?
That's it. But there's a... I don't want to use the word spirit, because spirit's kind of a low-hanging word. We can talk about mentality. We can talk about all the descriptive words.
Go with spirit. We're a low-hanging podcast. Spirit's fine.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out. I almost feel like Postecoglou uses this game as the base and the foundation for the fuck you mentality. Sorry, Tim, for the longevity of his career. Like this, everything that he's done so far is great. But this was like the real first test of adversity where everything goes wrong for this group.
It really does.
And that's where, when he said post-game, even with five guys, we'll have a crack. Like, I think that's what he's trying to create. He's trying to create a locker room atmosphere. He's trying to create a training ground atmosphere. He's trying to an accountability of performance. I think that's what you're seeing. He wants guys, the analogy, get on the bus. He wants guys that are on the bus. And if you're not on the bus, get the fuck off the bus. Sorry, Tim. I've been cursing a lot today.
I know. And Tim's not actually here live today, so this is going to be so much work for Tim. So fuck you, Tim. Sorry, Tim.
I agree with everything you say, and I agree with kind of the specific eye.
But you see why I done it.
I really do.
Yeah.
Because I think when you go, if I was, I'm trying to think about, like, if I was in this situation as a player and I was in this group, Ange is the type of manager that I would want to play for. There's a lot about him that you could see that you're like, okay, he's tough as nails. He's got a great personality, great verbal communicator. You'll know exactly where you stand. This is a style of football that he wants. It's wide open. It's fun. It's attack minded. It's not just sit back, defend, and absorb. There's different variations. They can play through press. They can, you know, they can play through the methodical buildup, moving off the ball. They're a good transition team in the attack. They create great goal scoring opportunities. They have a lot of really good things that they're doing. But again, I really think that it's just like, like, no matter what, we play our system. And maybe he's rigid, kind of like a Pep, that we don't know yet, that he'd rather lose playing his way than win conceding to something that he doesn't believe in.
Well, we'll find out if they lose five in a row and try and do this again. Sure. One final question for you on this game, Danny. I could do 1,000 on this, but there's another thing I wanted to bring up with you, because on the first or second weekend of this season, we did what ended up being, we dubbed it the decision show. And we went through a bunch of decisions in the weekend that went wrong. In this particular game, they went to VAR 9 times, right? Which is a crazy amount. The game was chaotic. And some of the hot takes on social media, our friend Rodney Marsh amongst them, were like, VAR, ruining football since 2016. And I got to tell you, I have some sympathy for VAR being a broad negative in the game. I don't think VAR negatively impacted this particular game. And I'll tell you what. I think they got everything, bar not sending Romero off on the first one, right. And that's debatable. That's my opinion they got that wrong, but I am willing to be convinced that that little David Beckham-esque kick-out shouldn't have been. I think it should, but that's fine. You can convince me. But just going through these really quickly, we had Spurs goal disallowed. That was the right decision. We had potential red card for Udogi. That is, again, debatable, but I think yellow card felt just about right. It was very, very close.
Yeah.
But you can explain to me why that wasn't given.
Didn't catch him,
Exactly, right? Chelsea goal disallowed for handball. It was handball, rightly disallowed. Romero kicks out at Colwell in 22 minutes. We've mentioned that already. Chelsea have another goal disallowed. It was offside. It was the right decision. Chelsea get a penalty for Romero's terrible tackle, which we spoke about earlier. That was the right decision, and he was quite rightly sent off. Chelsea have another goal disallowed. Jackson has the ball in the net, converting from Sterling's cross, but he was clearly offside. Postecoglou gets a yellow card in this game, which was referred by VAR, we are told. Sterling goes down, no penalty. Right decision. Colwell and Sarr get booked for pushing and shoving. Right decision. No action taken on James for a flailing arm. Right decision. Udogi second yellow. Wasn't VAR, but that was the right decision. And on and on and on it goes. The Eric Dyer one. I wanted that Dyer one to be onside so hard. Right? I am a West Ham fan. I got up off my seat having turned the game on when he scored it, celebrating wildly because I was so enraptured by this game. I wanted it to be a goal, but he was offside and it was the right decision. And we go on. And Dunny, the hot takes of VAR is killing the game, I'm happy to listen to them. I don't necessarily agree with all of them. I think it has certainly ruined some games. But here in this game, was this maybe the game that VAR almost proved its worth and that it can add to the drama of a game by getting the right decisions, not the other way around?
I wouldn't disagree with you in a second. I think even the absolute belter that Caicedo hit where Jackson was caught in an offside position because he was literally in the sideline and affecting the goalkeeper's sideline on that, even that was correct. One of the things I agree most with in the post-game presser of Ange Postecoglou was his assessment that we're continuously undermining the referees and we're not giving them the adequate respect that they deserve. Because when you undermine the authority to the effect of which we have, and again, I watch pro Major League Soccer, they do a phenomenal job, but we don't nearly have the same amount of pressure, the amount of television shows, the amount of social engagement the amount of outbursts from managers and players that they do over in the Premier League. And people will say, well, MLS does it so well. Well, MLS isn't nearly under the same scrutiny. They do it in a phenomenal way. And Howard Webb was really part of the architecture of what this looks like. And now being a part of PGMOL. And I know we'll get to Arteta, but I think what we've done is Howard Webb has done a very good job, and he's always been a great communicator. I think by going to the Premier League, he bit off something more than he realized when the idea of being more transparent, being more communicative, both publicly and privately to the clubs and to the general public with the television show. What we're doing now is a one size fits all in every single play. What we're doing now is, well, you did it for them, but you didn't do it for us. What we're doing now is we're trying to tit for tat in every single situation. Even the Mikel Arteta situation a month ago with the Liverpool situation, he was like, oh, we got to show respect for referees. We got to show respect for the process. Then when it affects him, he loses his shirt. So I think when Howard Webb opened up the door for more transparency, television show, and in particular apologies to clubs, I think that's when it turned to, because I can remember this clearly, Cote Romero handball in the box should have been a penalty for Manchester United. Afterwards, Bruno Fernandes is saying, well, I guess we'll be waiting for our apology for PGMOL. I hope they send one. And to an extent, he's right, because now it's a reference point. Everybody deserves an apology if there's this perception of a call that hasn't gone their way. So on the backside of what happened with Arsenal, now you're looking at where everything seemingly goes wrong, and you can argue up and down based on your perspective. If it was, if it wasn't, if Eddie Howe was on the other, it was foot was on, or she was on the other foot, would he be arguing it as, you know, as I guess angrily, as we saw from Mikel Arteta, and would Mikel Arteta say, no, of course that ball was in play. Of course that wasn't a foul. Of course he was in an onside position. It's just the eye of the beholder in situations like this. So going back to Postecoglou, we are seeing the undermining of the professionalism of referees. Now, the accountability conversation is something for PGMOL, but I think the application of the tech and the humanization, even though it took longer, it's taking longer because we have so much more speculation on the process. And now what people have been forgetting is the APP, the attacking phase of play, all of this, when you're in possession, you win the ball, leads to a goal. They're not just looking for, is there a handball in the box? They're not just looking for, is he in an offside position? They're not just looking for, is there kind of a foul inside the area? They're going all the way back to when a team won possession that leads to the finality of finding the back of the net. So all of this is based on, we're like, oh my God, how's it taking 3 minutes? How's it taking 4 minutes? It's because all of us want to make sure that we're holding them accountable for getting the decisions right. At the end of the day, all that extra time added, they got it right. I think it was a very good job by the referees, even though a lot of people are pissed off about it, screaming at the moon.
Speaking of pissed off, let's get to Mikel Arteta. Newcastle United beat Arsenal at the weekend by a controversial goal 2-0. It took 5 minutes to check this, which again, people are furious about. Mikel Arteta, quote, "It was embarrassing what happened and how the goal stands. I had 20 years in this country and now I feel ashamed. It's an absolute disgrace." We remind you, in October, Mikel Arteta said, "We need to give the referees a chance. They're just people. They're just humans, you know." But, you know, sometimes these things happen that change your viewpoint on it. So, the question is, was the ball over the line for Joe Willock? And that's inconclusive. And so they went with the on-field call. Was there a foul from Joe Linton on Gabriel? A shove in the back? Ian Wright certainly thinks so. Most people certainly think so. The referee at the time didn't, and it wasn't overturned. Was there a handball from Joe Linton? It certainly hits his arm, but was it intentional and did it meet the criteria? They decided no. And was Anthony Gordon offside in advance of the ball when it was struck by Joe Linton and fell into his path? That came back as inconclusive as well. So two decision calls and two inconclusive on this. Arteta said embarrassing, disgraceful, worst he's ever seen. Ian Wright thinks definite foul should have been given. What's your view on it, Danny? Should it have been given? Should it not? And what about the furore afterwards?
Well, I'll tell you what. This game was another game from the weekend that turned into a Sunday league where beers were given after the game and people were just kicking the living shit out of each other. Sorry, Tim. The Kai Havertz challenge on the sideline, whether you think he got him or he didn't get him. Bruno Guimaraes with that. He deserved a straight red for that. Yeah. That chicken wing that he threw. Yeah, it was uncalled for. The intensity was amped up. I was there for it. I love the intensity, but there's certain lines that have to be drawn. What gets lost in this conversation, because it's a point lost for Arsenal, is at the end of the day, the control the controllables, which are scoring goals away from home. And they did not do that. So that's just baseline. This isn't pro-Newcastle, anti-Arsenal. It's not pro-Arsenal, anti-Newcastle. I'm looking at it from a broadcaster's perspective. And I'll remind people, when everybody and my good buddy Dave from Michigan is a huge Arsenal homer, he's sending me the clips from he defended a ball out of bounds. And I was like, just a reminder, that camera's probably three stories up behind the goal, shooting at 60 yards from an opposite direction. And if you go back to the World Cup in Qatar, they did a great job. I think it was on FIFA's Twitter, where they showed where the ball was sitting outside of the field of play, but it's a sphere, and the sphere of the line, it still hadn't completely gone over the sideline, because as the ball from one angle showed it was out, then they showed it right down the line and you could see the ball was still on the line. So optical illusions from different angles, you can play with it, you play against it. And how many times have we seen people using offside and you're saying, oh, he's 100% offside, and the camera angle is coming from an angle, right? And then all of a sudden you line it up and you're like, oh, he's really onside. Sorry, Tim. A lot of curses today, but at least they're only sorry, Tim. So inconclusive, the problem with the tech now is, should we then be asking, I don't know if it's cameras, the amount of Premier League cameras is unlike any other league.
Yeah.
It is one of the best shot. The amount of tech cameras that they have is extraordinarily high. So at this stage, should we be asking for four more cameras? One sideline, one end line, and making sure that we have conclusive evidence should the ball go out of bounds in moments like this. Because we already have goal line technology, right? Look at the watch. Yep, says it's a goal, whole ball, cross, technology is there. Hawkeye should already have this tech. So if we're going to add about tech and VAR, then we should probably add this to the conversation, right? To just have a definitive angle no matter what. So the foul, I'll speak from it only as a defender.
Yeah.
I feel as though, based on his body language, and as that, when you know that someone's on your back, you know the reference point of the goal. By the way, no one's talking about David Raya, how he couldn't slip a piece of paper underneath his feet because he didn't get up and take that cross out of the air. He had another shocker.
I'm sure Aaron Ramsdale's dad is talking about it.
I'm just saying, he did not get up for that. He could have done much better on taking that ball out of the air. But what I see, this is just me as a former center back, I see Gabriel knowing that someone's on his back and he's trying to go down. So his bot, and this is, again, in this situation, what you're trying to do, because you know you're so close to the goal and the ball's coming in, you're trying to flick it on. You're not, it's too high to head it clear. You're not going back across the face of goal. So if you watch his body language again, I'll just suggest this for anybody. He's ducking to flick it. That's the idea, is he gets his body down and he's using the front part of his head to push it up and over anybody that's behind him. Now, when you slow it down, what I hands the back, if he would have called that as a foul immediately, VAR is not intervening to say, hey, bud, you made a clear and obvious mistake. We don't think that's a foul. This is one of those gray area moments. I think he's going like this to flick it. There are hands on his back. I don't know how much of a push it is, but I think there's enough to where I can see what he's trying to do. Then the final, I think Gordon's in an onside position. I think he's behind the ball, but it just depended upon seeing it from the other side. I think from the angle that I saw, he was in an onside position. So I think the biggest one is talking about the hands to the back. Now, here's the problem, and I suggest this for anybody. Just understand that real time versus slow-mo versus super slow-mo versus still gives you a dramatically different understanding, or at least perspective, of what happened in real time. So I, again, I'm going to say I understand what Gabriel was trying to do. If the referee calls a foul, I have no problem with it. In the moment like this, I can understand the fury and the uproar towards it, because at the end of the day, Arsenal lose 2 points away from home, and that's what's infuriating in moments like this. But at the same time, if it was opposite, I'm not sure that Mikel Arteta is saying, oh, of course it's an obvious foul. Of course we shouldn't have got the game winner. Of course the referee should have made that call. I don't think he has that same perspective at all.
I mean, the only things for me from it is that I was really annoyed about how many people seem to think they need to explain the concept of perspective. Like, you don't need to explain this to us. We get it. And yet there was a television show in Holland that did it. Gary Neville did it on the TV. And it was like someone on the internet put a roll of toilet paper down and put a ball next to it. And like, oh, the ball's over the line. The trouble wasn't that people don't understand perspective. It's that there was no evidence the ball did or didn't completely go over the line. And I'm happy, frankly, with us giving the benefit of the doubt to the attackers, or every now and then, in football, at some point, we need to just go with the fact that there are officials and this is their call in that moment. And what I love about this is that there's probably like a row of people from that point at St. James's Park on that side up to the very top tier. So what's that? Maybe like, let's say 100 people. There's 100 people on this earth that know whether this ball was in or out at that exact moment. And they're all Newcastle fans, and they are never, ever, ever going to tell you. They're going to keep it buttoned and zipped. And will not tell you, but they know.
5 years later in the pub.
Hey, yes, they'll be like, I was there that day. Do you remember that day that when we went on to win the league that year? Do you remember that? Yep. Or it cost Arsenal the league by a point. Do you remember that? I was there that day. Me and Sheila saw it. It was definitely, definitely out.
Me and Sheila.
Which I loved. And it did remind me really briefly of that bit in the US Women's World Cup where the US got knocked out. And I was doing the commentary of the game, and I wanted to do the joke, but I didn't know how many people would get the reference. On the day after the US women got knocked out with that penalty against Sweden, there was a great joke someone sent one of the shows on SiriusXM FC, which was the USA eliminated by a millimeter, or now, as it's called, an elimometer. Elimometer. It was funny at the time. And now you can see why I didn't do it. Danny, look, we are nearly out of time here. Yeah. And I'm really sorry we've got to cram this in tight. You've been working on MLS playoffs.
Yep.
And I wanted to get the general overview of how it's going. I know you're super on board with the three-game structure, and it's certainly given us some drama in those secondary games where washout from the first kind of kills aggregate in the second. And I think we kind of saw that in the LAFC Whitecaps game.
Yeah.
I wanted to get your view on that game. And also at the end of the game, people wouldn't have seen this, and I saw it on social media and got a bit perplexed by it. There's a second goal for LAFC which isn't then given, where it looks like the referee has stopped the Whitecaps guy from getting the ball. I only saw it online. I thought it was 2-0. And I came to the show the next morning saying 2-0. It was like, oh, it was only the Boanga penalty that counted. So tell us a bit about what happened there.
Yeah, controversial penalty. Mario Gonzalez turns, pivots, gets in between two defenders. He kind of pulls the landing gear up because he knows he's absorbing some type of contact. Did he need to pull the landing gear up, or was he kind of baiting the referee, Tim Ford, into the call? At the end of the day, responsibility of Vancouver defenders is to keep him going backwards as opposed to getting split. So I understand. It's one of those where if he doesn't call it, I don't think it's suggested to look at VAR. The monitor, if he does call it, I don't think there's enough to say you've made a clear and obvious mistake. So that lit Vanny on fire. Second half. And again, this is Vanny's personality. I don't know how to explain it, but it's so intoxicating. Like, he is the guy that has it. You just want to be around him. He's one of those guys that, like, when I always joke around, like, Sean Deutsch play, look, he likes with Deutschy. That's what I want to do with Vanny. I mean, he's just one of those guys that you'd love to grab a beer with, go sing karaoke with. He's just an incredible personality. So what happens is they're chasing the game. They've unloaded all the benches. Because it's not an aggregate, you just unload the benches. And we've seen that each and every game. All the offensive players on the field. We just saw it with FC Dallas winning 3-1 at home against Seattle, which the game Max and I will be on Friday up in Seattle for that third game. As they're going for that the game-tying goal, what happens is the ball's cleared. Tim Ford is outside the penalty area. Great perspective. He's backing up to his right, has no idea that there's a Vancouver player. The ball's coming to his left. A Vancouver player is trying to get to the ball. They come together. Everyone's like, oh, he knocked him down. Tim Ford had no idea he's there. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gets in this conversation of when the ball hits a referee per IFAB, blow the whistle, drop ball for the team that had possession. now maybe we start to adjust it. If there's a collision with the referee, does the referee blow the whistle in the same type of manner? What's being lost in this conversation is a Vancouver player has the ball. He's got the ball. He's facing his own goal. The goalkeeper is already forward because they're trying to get a game-tying goal. It's in the dying moments. He still has a defensive player at the midfield stripe protecting any transition opportunity. Instead of playing a first-time ball, as the collision happens, he tries to do a step-over turn. He gets stripped. So then what happens? They go the length of the field. Carlitos Vela slows it down. And I think it's like a 3v1 or it's a 2v1. And he plays the ball in, and the ball's knocked in the back of the net. For everybody that's confused on this, offside position. And why is he in an offside position? Because when we talk about offside, it's two players. It's the goalkeeper and it's one other player. The goalkeeper had vacated. He's behind the play. As Carlitos Vela plays a forward pass, still one defender on the line. I can't remember who knocks it in. Maybe Buonga. Whoever knocks it in is in an offside position because there's not two players. So if Buonga would have been behind him and it would have been just a sideways pass, a level pass, he's onside, goal. But because he was in front of Vela, as that ball's played forward, he's offside. That's why the goal doesn't count. Vanny loses his Sorry, Tim. He's sent off, comes back in a few minutes later, double birds the crowd, said some highly inappropriate things in the post-game press conference, which he's not just going to miss the first game of next season. I expect a massive, massive, massive fine. I mean, I could see like a $50,000 fine coming.
Can you tell
way.
Us what he said? If for those that haven't heard it, it was something.
So I hadn't heard it. I only saw the report of it, but it was something along the line of, if Tim Ford is found face down in a river tonight, the cops are going to be looking for me. Something like that. Oof. Which it's we have a tough enough time and. The professional referees organization come out publicly on Twitter, and rightly so. They did a phenomenal job verbalizing how disgusting the comments were. And what we forget is the ramifications from the top down. I'm in a city where a kid punched a referee. That referee passed away. It was about 10 years ago. I'm a father of three boys. The language that's being used towards referees on the weekends is something that's being picked up from everything that they're seeing. And whether that's the aggression of the managers, it's the verbalization of the managers, it's the body language of the players. This is what it's going down towards. So I would highly expect Don Garber, Major League Soccer, to come down very, very hard on Vanni Sartini.
Have to. Danny, time is against us, and that's all we have time for today's program. We look forward to listening to you on Counterattack this week on Sirius XMFC. And where can we see you on the TV?
I will be with Max Bretos, Tio Max. I will be with him in Seattle against FC Dallas on Friday, Lumen Field, second game of the night, Apple TV. All the games will be for free in this round. So come on over, grab a drink, play some bingo with me.
And I am going to be hopefully staying up late enough tonight to watch Columbus Crew win their second game against Atlanta and get through to the next phase of MLS Cup. And we're back with another podcast next week. I'll also be doing the commentary of Bournemouth Newcastle on Premier League Live, TalkSport's international team on Saturday. Right. Danny, always a pleasure, never a chore. That is Brian Dunseth. I am Tom Rennie. Tim Horsey produced the programme. We'll see you next week.